Welcome to the Nightly Five podcast with Ben O'Shea.
On today's show, an international operation has caught extortionists that were responsible for the death of an Australian teen. Plus, we give you the lowdown on the new chair of the ABC and reveal why the imminent death of Armaguard could also mark the end of cash in Australia. Heard the buzz about Caitlin Clark? Well, we'll tell you why this US college athlete has rocked the sports world. And talking about sports, sort of, we've got big news for Happy Gilmore fans. In our top story today, a breakthrough in a sextortion case that claimed the life of an Aussie teen.
The FBI is sounding the alarm over sextortion.
Two Nigerian men accused of sextortion that led to a teenage Australian boy taking his own life have been charged. The boy had been engaging online with an unknown person who threatened to share personal photos of him with his family and friends if he did not pay $500. It's believed he took his own life in 2023 as a result of the threats. Police investigated the matter before it was referred to the New South Wales State Crime Command's Cybercrime Squad, which traced the alleged perpetrators to Nigeria before requesting help from the Australian Federal Police. As a result of the AFP-led investigation, working alongside South African and Nigerian authorities, two Nigerian men were arrested and charged with sextortion offences in March. The men were found in a slum in Nigeria with a population of 25 million people, according to New South Wales Police in a statement released today. The men will be dealt with locally, where authorities can prosecute for Australia-based offences. Commander of New South Wales State Crime Command Cybercrime Squad, Detective Superintendent Matthew Kraft, said the message to young people was that they don't need to suffer in silence. AFP Commander Helen Schneider commended the work of investigators, saying the arrests showed what could be achieved when law enforcement worked together to fight a global problem. And it is a global problem. Police say sextortion, particularly of young people, is dramatically rising. Cases are up nearly 400% in the last 18 months. And remember, if you're struggling or just need someone to talk to, if you're a victim of sextortion, you can call Lifeline on 131114, or for those aged 5 to 25, Kids Helpline on 1800 55 1800.
It gives me great pleasure to introduce Mr. Kim Williams, who we will recommend to the Governor General to be the next chair of the ABC.
Kim Williams, a former chief executive of News Corp and boss of Foxtel, has replaced Ida Buttrose as chair of the ABC. As Ida found out, it can be a controversial gig, which is why the editor of The Nightly, Anthony DeSegli, was so keen to have a chat to Auntie's new chair. And now, Anthony, I had a chance to sit down with Kim way back in the day when he was at Foxtel. He's a fascinating bloke. Albo called him a Renaissance man. What were your initial takeaways from talking to him?
Yeah, look, he's one of the great conversationalists, to be honest. And I think at the start of the story, I refer to it of it's like swallowing a dictionary and then washing it down with a thesaurus. And it's a little bit like that with Kim. He likes big words, and there's an exuberance for intelligent conversation, which I love. And so talking to him is really, really fascinating, in short.
Yeah, I think the intro, your description of him is so perfect. Albo calls him a Renaissance man. You talked about his sort of exuberance for that conversation that, you know, could be mistaken as old school wankerism, because he does have, like, he's just a lover of the arts, isn't he?
Yeah, look, he is. And especially you can, I sort of tongue-in-cheek use that term, yeah, sort of old-fashioned wankerism, because you can imagine how it goes down in a cynical newsroom. But the thing, you know, Kim Williams is one of those rare creatures who, you know, he's been an AFL commissioner, but he's also sat on the Sydney Opera House Trust. You know, he's currently a board member of the New South Wales State Library. And he's just one of those people who is so intelligent that it stretches across pretty much all boundaries. And I think that's what he'll bring to this role. And look, I think he's the right person at the right time.
Yeah, he'll need that intelligence to negotiate the minefield that is politics at the ABC. What did he have to say to you about that, kind of figuring his way between that Labor-Liberal divide, which is something that Auntie hasn't always done that well or that comfortably?
Yeah, look, there's no doubt that he has come to the ABC at what is a flashpoint for the national broadcaster. I mean, it's long been the enemy of sort of conservative media. It's long been at, you know, had fisticuffs with News Corp, for example. the big issue for the ABC right now is that the left has kind of turned on it as well. And so he's come at a time where it feels like there's enemies on the left, enemies on the right. Look, Kim, his overarching theme is what he wants to bring to the ABC is impartiality. And he even sort of refers to it as, you know, he's now, I think his terminology is along the lines of, I'm now sort of boringly, reliably sort of, you know, pushing impartiality. That's where he wants to be. And he has a quote, a bit of a giveaway, I thought, where Kim tells me that, you know, he sees the ABC as a good central place that reflects modern Australia. And I think that's what he's all about.
And I thought he had some fascinating stuff to say about social media, because, you know, most people think that social media is a big part of the media landscape these days. Kim doesn't necessarily see it that way.
We are 100% in lockstep when it comes to social media. I mean, Kim's point is basically he can never understand the sort of overemphasis amongst journalists on something like Twitter. And he talks about how, you know, you can waste a lot of time for a very small audience on Twitter when you have this gigantic audience, which is the official ABC channel that you're working for. And he makes two really, really valid points. One is focus on that big audience, focus on the job at hand, and stop thinking about your tiny personal audience. And then he also makes a really valid point about the ABC Act. And as a journalist at the ABC, it's a very prescriptive act about objectivity, impartiality, scrutinising and forensically checking facts. And, you know, his question is, do you have time to do that when you're in a 24/7 sort of media frenzy of putting up Twitter posts? And, you know, it's a really valid point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it speaks to how you stay relevant as well, which is something that I think the ABC has been a bit lost in the wilderness. They've got their iView platform, which launched with so much promise, seems to have diminished a little bit. And he's obviously come from a streaming background at Foxtel. So what do you think he's going to bring to the ABC? How is he going to shape it?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned iView. He actually uses that as the example where he says, you know, Kim's always been really big on innovation and tech. That reference of him being a Renaissance man also applies to his views on technology. And you know, his short stint at the top of News Corp was a lot of the theme of that was him being at loggerheads about how fast the newspaper should move into the tech space. He talks about iView and he talks about how it was once a game changer and almost at the top of the streaming platforms in Australia, and now talks about how it's fallen off the wayside. And just little things like you go to ABC iView and, you know, it's a recommended list is crap and he wants to fix that, you know. And so stuff like that, I think he'll come in, you know, he's a change agent and I don't think he'll wait around. I think you'll know pretty quickly that things have got Kim's stamp on it.
Yeah, it's a great read on someone that we'll be hearing a lot more from in the next few years. You can find it by downloading the Nightly app. Editor Anthony DeSegli, always great to have you on the Nightly Five.
Thanks so much, Ben.
Armaguard reportedly balked at having to open up its books in an about-face its owner, Lynn Fox, delivered the financial support. With Armaguard confident over the coming months, it will get the business onto a long-term sustainable footing.
They used to say cash is king. Now some young people might have never seen the stuff in real life. But for everyone else, if you've taken money out at an ATM, been handed $20 in change at a supermarket, or paid someone in cash, you've probably used the services of Armaguard. Owned by the Lynn Fox Group, it services about 90% of the cash-in-transit market. But the company is struggling. Use of cash as a means of payment has declined sharply in recent years, a trend that was only turbocharged by the pandemic. Last year, Armaguard said it would need a $190 million lifeline over the next 3 years in order to stay afloat. Last week, though, as we just heard, the company rejected a $26 million rescue offer put together by some of Australia's biggest banks and retailers, which would have required the company to open up its books. Instead, it opted for a smaller $10 million package from its parent company, Lynn Fox, that will see it through the next few weeks. But the company's future remains far from certain, which is a worry for the Reserve Bank. As a result of the move away from cash, there are now far fewer bank branches and ATMs operating in Australia. Between 2017 and 2023, bank branch numbers declined by 37%, and the number of bank-owned ATMs fell from nearly 14,000 in Australia to just 5,693. According to the Australian Banking Association, cash is now only being used for about 13% of payments, which is a 57% decline since 2017. 2017. The RBA has a vested interest in maintaining cash as a store of wealth and a means of payment for many people, particularly as a backup option when electronic payment systems are unavailable or offline. So the RBA has previously floated the idea of an industry cooperative model, which would see major cash users like banks form a cooperative entity to replace private sector suppliers like Armaguard. It's a system that's already in place in Europe, so we know it can work. The bigger issue, though, is what a cashless society will eventually look like in Australia, and that's a question we just don't know the answer to yet. But the imminent death of Armaguard probably gets us closer to finding out.
Clark opens three. It's good!
You've all heard of Michael Jordan, right? So I don't really need to tell you much more about US college basketball phenom Caitlin Clark than that people call her the Michael Jordan of women's basketball. Unlike Jordan, though, Clark didn't get the chance at a buzzer beater to win the NCAA championship on the weekend when her Iowa team went down to South Carolina 87-75. That will always leave room in the GOAT debate, but there can be no doubting Clark's legacy on the sport. Last year's championship game between LSU and Clark's Iowa was watched by 9.9 million people. It was overwhelmed by the 14.2 million who watched Iowa's semi-final victory over Connecticut on Friday night with a peak of 17 million. That's good enough for the most viewed women's basketball game on record and the largest audience for an ESPN basketball broadcast, male or female, college or professional. That's more than any World Series baseball game last year, any NBA Finals game last year, and every Daytona 500 since 2013. So it's not a stretch to say the NCAA final will have broken that record when the ratings come out, with America glued to the screen to watch the all-time leading college basketball scorer. FYI, Clark broke that record last month, which had previously stood for 54 years. So do yourself a favour, folks, and Google Caitlin Clark Logo 3. You'll thank me later because you've just witnessed greatness that only comes along once in a generation. She didn't end her college career as a champion, but Caitlin Clark has 100% inspired the champions of the future.
Well, what is this I hear about you breaking a rake and throwing it into the woods?
What? I didn't break it. I was just testing its durability. And then I placed it in the woods because it's made of wood, and I just thought he should be with his family.
Son of a bitch, Ball, why didn't you just go home? That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
In news that will thrill fans of Adam Sandler comedies and possibly annoy the people who hate the US comedian, Happy Gilmore 2 is in the works. Drew Barrymore, who's a mate of Sandler, teased the news in a clip promoting an upcoming episode of her TV series, The Drew Barrymore Show. She and Sandler had exchanged messages the previous evening about whether a Happy Gilmore sequel was happening, and he replied to her during the taping. She informed the audience and the cameras, "This just in, I have breaking news, and I'll say this from my source that it's in process. There is a process, and that process is in process." So what does that all mean? Well, I'd say it means Happy Gilmore 2 has got the green light. Barrymore had earlier said that she had seen a news report that actor Christopher McDonald, who played the villain Shooter McGavin in the movie, claimed that he had seen a copy of a Happy Gilmore 2 script. Sandler flagged in 2022 that he'd hoped to make a sequel, and while Universal released the original 1996 movie, Sandler's production company now has a deal with Netflix. And we know Netflix has the money and need for content, so maybe this could be a hole-in-one for everyone concerned. And that, folks, is today's show. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and join me tomorrow on The Nightly Five.
The Nightly Five podcast is brought to you by Seven West Media. For all these stories and more, head to thenightly.com.au, helping you get in front of tomorrow.